Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody, it's Dirt here, and I would like to personally thank you for listening to the Dirt and Sprague podcast brought to you on the fam by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Love not to wisely.
What's happening, folks? Final hour, Dirt and Sprague, 2:02 on a Tuesday. Hope your Tuesdays are going well. If you're just turning on your radio, getting in your car, you missed a lot. We started the show today with the sad, sad Portland news. Tom Peterson passed away.
Did Gloria pass away?
Not Gloria, too.
She looked older than him in those commercials.
Not Gloria, too. But Tom Peterson. That's a sad day for him.
Flat top kept him looking young.
It did, yeah. Yeah, it did. He's been battling...
86 years young, by the way.
I believe he had Parkinson's, right, for about 15 years. He was battling Parkinson's for a long time.
Oh, I thought he died from cancer.
Well, I don't know if that's what ultimately killed him, but I do know he had Parkinson's.
Yeah, I didn't read the
story. I did some Tom Peterson research tonight, just to, you know, see what he's been up to the last couple of years.
I just cried because it's an icon.
Tom Peterson and Gloria's too. We talked about that.
I liked it better when it's just Tom Peterson.
You don't like Aunt Gloria's too?
No.
I liked Aunt Gloria's too.
I'm Tom Peterson.
You better thank Gloria because
she kept him in business.
Bailed him out of bankruptcy.
Yeah, without Gloria too, it would have been all over.
Let the man go down in flames.
That's all she wrote.
Let me do it my way.
They apparently they closed their final store in 2009. That was the last time they had one.
They were open until 2009.
I know, that surprised me too. I didn't realize they went on that long.
It's still weird driving down 82nd and Foster and not seeing that, like seeing his face on that building
just
anymore.
Sticking out of the side of the road. Yeah, Tom Peterson passed away. Sad day here. If you're a longtime Portland resident, I think you remember who he is. Lots to get to here in the final hour. We're going to talk about underrated college football programs. There's a team from the state of Oregon that made that list. Also overrated college football programs over the last 10 years. There's a couple of Pac-12 schools that are on that list, and we'll probably close out the show with a little more Blazer talk as they sign Mo Harkless to a 4-year, $40 million contract extension, and predictions are coming in. Way too early predictions from ESPN experts. Where do they think the Blazers will finish? We'll tell you that to close out the final segment of the show. One of the topics, though, we didn't get to yesterday that I just wanted to bring up and discuss because I think it's interesting is Michael Jordan. I think we all remember Michael Jordan from his playing days.
I don't. Could you enlighten me?
He played basketball. He wore number 23. For a brief period, wore number 45. But we all remember that he never talked about social issues. He used to say, Republicans buy shoes too. It's not my job, basically. Went the Barkley route and never stood up for certain social issues. That is changing, though. As he wrote a piece for the Undefeated of ESPN, and just want to read a little bit of it here for you. Said, as a proud American, a father who lost his own dad in a senseless act of violence, and a black man, I have been deeply troubled by the deaths of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement and angered by the cowardly and hateful targeting of killing of police officers. I grieve with the families who have lost loved ones, and I know their pain all too well. It goes on and on. I'll tweet this out with our show page if you want to go read it. That's just kind of the opening paragraph. There's a few more. And he's going to be making donations of $1 million to different organizations. And look, I never want to speak negatively as somebody who comes out and shares their thoughts. I think we've been asking Michael Jordan to do this for a long time, and now he finally does. I just kind of ask the question of what does he really say here? Like he brings up that he doesn't like the killing of unarmed African Americans. He doesn't like the killing of police officers. He doesn't like violence. I think that's something we can all agree with. There doesn't seem to be a deeper take here. I think it's just because Michael Jordan is releasing this statement. It's a pretty big deal.
Well, I read a really good piece by Clay Travis, friend of the show, for Outkick the Coverage. And he wrote a piece about this and how there's political propaganda essentially coming from ESPN and the way they're skewing his whole statement. And I thought it was actually a pretty good piece and really well done. And I kind of agree with most of it, of just when you read his entire statement from start to finish, because ESPN's done a good job of taking these little snippets, like the cover of the story, Michael Jordan, I can no longer stay silent. And you're like, wow, what did MJ say?
What did he have
to
say?
But if you read the statement from start to finish, It's basically like, I don't like violence. Cops should be living. African Americans shouldn't be killed. And I'm going to donate $1 million to both parties, basically is what he is saying. And so ESPN has prompted up as this and that. And even though I agree with where you're going, Dirt, of this is kind of as vanilla a statement as you can give. Of course, nobody likes violence. That's an easy thing to release.
Right.
I do think there's merit in the name behind said vanilla statement of Michael Jordan never came out on a big social issue because in part of that quote, Republicans buy shoes too. And albeit really late in his life, not playing, but still relevant to sneakerheads and people in the basketball community, I still think there's merit to him saying something at all. Even if it's not a great statement and he doesn't take a stance for Black Lives Matter or police officers or protesting or this side or that side in politics, at least he's finally willing to put something out there of substance.
Yeah, yeah.
And donate some money to two great causes. I think that's what you take away is the statement itself is as vanilla bean as it gets, but it's the fact that his name's behind something now that has to do with social issues, and he's donating some of his incredible wealth to at least two good causes. I do think it's been hyped up a little more than it should be, but again, it's Michael Jordan, arguably the biggest name that will ever be associated with the game of basketball.
Yeah, whenever he talks, people are going to listen. And I do agree with that to a certain sense that, you know, just him putting his name behind it is going to lead some credence to the words. But just a couple of the snippets from this. Said, over the past three decades, I have seen up close the dedication of law enforcement officers who protect me and my family. I have the greatest respect for their sacrifice and service. I also recognize that for many people of color, their experiences with law enforcement have been different than mine. I have decided to speak out and hope we can come together as Americans through peaceful dialogue, education, achieve constructive change. He closes the statement saying, we are privileged to live in the world's greatest country, a country that has provided my family and me the greatest of opportunities. The problems we face didn't happen overnight, and they won't be solved tomorrow. But if we all work together, we can foster greater understanding, positive change, and create a more peaceful world for ourselves, our children, our families, and our communities. And I don't want to sound like I'm just overly negative on this, because it's there's not many ground-shaking opinions that you can have or solutions that can be offered up, right? I mean, I don't have any solutions off the top of my head.
Well, nobody's given great solutions.
Yeah, so I don't want to sound like I'm just negative on him. And I just basically what I'm trying to say is I hope this is just a start. Right. Like, I'm glad that Michael Jordan is lending his voice to a serious issue that's going on in the country. And I hope there is more of this to come.
I highly doubt this. There's more coming from
him. More substance.
Like,
hopefully.
This really is like as bland a statement as you could possibly give. Again, I just think you hearken back to the name and what it associates with. Like Melo coming out basically said, it's about time. This is a guy that has been
that
tied.
Was like his exact quote. He said, it's about damn time he spoke
and
up.
And Melo's actually, he's a brand Jordan. I think he's either still with it or he's an alum of it. Like, he's a brand Jordan guy. And he's coming out and saying, it's about time you used some of your star power to go towards social issues. But I just feel some athletes are built for this and some athletes aren't. And whether that's important to fans or not, some of these guys just don't have it programmed in them to come out and give their opinions, or they might not even have opinions on this. I think you'd be really surprised of people in the world that when you bring up a topic, nothing. Like,
yeah,
even
something
as simple as police violence or African Americans being innocently shot and
murdered.
Yeah,
they just don't follow the news.
Like, there's they don't follow news, so there's almost nothing there. That wouldn't shock me either. But I look at this and I say, well, he at least did something in his career at one point, albeit gave a bland statement, donated $1 million, which is great. I don't think you can overlook that part, but he's not built for it. This isn't who he is. He was the guy that created the brand. He's the guy that created and made cool basketball shoes and really brought that to the forefront of what it is now, a billion-dollar industry. He's just been brought up and raised and kind of grew up into this business mogul. And because I think of his ties corporately, was basically taught at a really, really early stage, don't get into it, don't go into the minutia and say this and that, and don't go Barkley. You stay as mum on everything, you push your brand, you continue to play your game, people will buy your product, and nobody will be offended by you. This is kind of, he created this himself. He turned himself into this corporate robot.
Yeah, he really did. So Michael Jordan releases a statement courtesy of The Undefeated, a new kind of outlet of ESPN. If you want to read it, we'll tweet it out at Dirt and Sprague here during the commercial break. It's a couple paragraphs long. I read about half of it during that segment, but hasn't been very outspoken on social issues before. Not a whole lot of substance behind this, but at least he's using his voice, hopefully, for some positive change and for some good. Well, let's talk some college football. Change topics on you a little bit. What are the 10 most underrated college football programs of the past 10 years? There's a team from the state of Oregon that made the list. We'll tell you who next on 1080 The Fan.
It's time for a peach.
It's 2:16 on a Tuesday. Welcome back in. Talking a little college football. We'll get to overrated programs here at the bottom of the hour.
Overrated?
Overrated. But I saw this list on the Big Lead, and I thought it was interesting because there's a local angle here. But if I were just to throw it out to you two gentlemen and the mighty fan listener, when you think underrated college football programs in the last 10 years, so going back to 2006, now just to give you a heads up, the metric that this list use is years that you started outside of the AP Top 25 and finished inside of the Top 25. So you... We're underrated.
I'm not going to remember everybody's rankings.
You overseeded expectations, basically. But of the underrated, which programs do you think have been the most underrated of the last 10 years?
Top of my head, I think it's obvious. You call it a homer pick, but I think Oregon State deserves to be in the conversation despite the last 3 years.
Yeah, if you're going back 10 years.
Yeah, because what Riley was able to do a few of those seasons, especially standing out with like the 9-3 season, for example, I would go, I think Iowa should be in that conversation.
TCU?
TCU's okay. A good one. I'd go okay. Michigan State deserves okay. to be in it. Baylor. I know Art Briles and everything just kind of blew up there, but the ability for him when he got there to turn that around the way he has. And then, I don't know, top of my head, Oklahoma State?
Okay. Well, you guys got a couple of them there. TCU is on the list. TCU comes in at number 6. Michigan State, also on the list, comes in at number 4. So you nailed a couple of them. Number one, kind of surprising. I don't think anybody would ever guess it. Cincinnati.
Yeah, they had a few good years.
Cincinnati has had
before
4 years.
Yeah, before Brian Kelly went to Notre Dame.
08, yeah.
They've had 4 years that they were not ranked in the preseason top 25, and they finished ranked inside the top 25.
Didn't he have like a couple of 11-1, 12-1 seasons?
Yeah, yeah. One of those years BCS. They came to Corvallis. They beat
the
Beavers.
Yeah, before the Big East broke up.
Yeah, they were still in that.
Didn't he make a BCS bowl game one of those
I believe
years?
They did. I want to say he left. I think he was one of those coaches that left.
He might have gone to 2.
Yeah, he might have.
With Cincinnati.
Like, didn't coach him in the bowl game kind of thing because he took the job at Notre Dame.
You know what I hate about those programs is, like, you remember some of those teams, and there's always those couple stud players from those teams, and you can't remember their names. I'm having that right now for Cincinnati.
With Cincinnati. Yeah. Hard, not a whole lot of household names that stand out about that program. There are 3 Pac-12 schools that made this list. Number 2 is the Utah Utes. One time in the last 10 years, they've been ranked in the preseason top 25. 4 times they've finished the season ranked in the top 25. So despite a bumpy start to their Pac-12 tenure, they are the second most underrated program in the country. One of the other Pac-12 schools that made this list is Stanford.
Yeah, Stanford sucks traditionally.
5 years they've been ranked in the preseason top 25. 5 years they've ranked in the postseason top 25. So they've never fallen out when ranked. So that's a good sign if you're Stanford. And the other Pac-12 school that made this list is... the Oregon State Beavers.
Boom, boom, boom.
Na, 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 na. 4 times the Oregon State Beavers have finished ranked in the top 25. Only 2 times they were ranked in the preseason top 25.
You're
they
darn
came
right.
in as, over the last 10 years as the 10th most underrated program in the country.
Well, let me give you one, too, that I don't know if it's listed because I don't have the list in front of me.
Okay.
Is West Virginia on that list? With Rich Rod.
Rocky Mountain. No, the other programs that made this list, I'll rattle them through them quickly. Baylor was number 9, so you got Baylor, although it's a little controversial now. BYU, number 8.
Yeah.
Why are they on that list? They won a title in like 81.
It was just 10 years. 10 years here.
10 last 10
2006
years.
2006 to 2016.
Yeah, but I always feel like they're always a...
Only 2 times they've been ranked in the preseason top 25. 4 yeah. times they finished postseason top 25.
I keep forgetting that metric you threw
out. So BYU's number 8. And then it was Stanford, TCU, Michigan State was 5. Boise State, number 4. Missouri, number 3. Utah, 2. Cincinnati, 1.
Yeah. It's really interesting to think about team like programs like that. Like they don't traditionally belong in those bigger conversations, top 25. But that's the ability. That's kind of the beauty of college football. And it's also why coaches make so damn much money is when you get that right guy in your program, he's going to turn it around. He's going to succeed. And I think that's kind of evidenced by looking at all the programs that are listed on this top 10 list.
Yeah, I think it's a good metric, though, of looking at teams that come into a season without any sort of expectations and they're able to rise above. The only caveat that I would put on that is that preseason polls are, for a lack of a better word,
they suck.
They're meaningless.
And that's why you mentioned BYU, right? Because they're on this list. I disagree with that. Like, I don't think BYU is underrated. I think they're pretty properly rated.
They've outseeded their preseason expectations. That's what it's all on. Well, and almost this is kind of to a certain point, it's a warning sign about preseason expectations that you can have teams that you're expecting a lot out of or not expecting anything out of, and they go on to have good runs. I think Clemson was a good example of that last year. You know, when I took Clemson to make it to the college football playoff, people disagreed. But at the same time, we both picked Auburn to make the college football playoff. And that thing crashed and burned a couple of weeks into the season. So it is always an important reminder to just be a little careful when those preseason polls start coming out. We all look at the way too early top 25s and then the AP poll come out, the coaches poll come out. And we get so caught up on where certain teams are ranked that it very rarely ends up close to where that is after the end of the season.
You know, the fun conversation is, I think the better one, the overrated programs.
Oh, you want to get to overrated programs?
I mean, I know you probably want to save that, don't
no,
you?
No, we can do that now. Let's get to overrated programs. So the same metric did the 10 most overrated programs. Who do you guys, what comes to mind when I say overrated? Same, it's the same exact metric. You started in the top 25, finished outside of the top 25.
Now, UCLA.
Okay.
This is back 10 years, same time frame.
2006 to 2016.
Notre Dame.
Okay. Notre Dame is one for me that if you were going to toss out, the two that come to my mind first are Notre Dame and Georgia.
It sounds ridiculous considering they won in 06 and got there in 09. Texas.
Okay.
Tennessee.
Tennessee's not a bad one.
Florida State.
There are two, I'll just warn you right now, there are two Pac-12 teams that are on this list. That are the 10 most overrated.
Washington.
Nope.
Is UCLA one of them?
Yep.
Arizona.
Nope.
Arizona
ASU.
State. Dun, dun.
USC.
Wow.
Yep. The two LA schools are the ones that made the list.
But you're dating back 10 years. When did Carroll leave?
That's the
very end of it.
Yeah. Chip Kelly took over, I want to say, in 2008, and that was, he throttled Carroll in Eugene, and that was the end of the Pete Carroll era.
Yeah, but even, because Pete Carroll, I think, started in 2010 in Seattle, right? Was it 2010?
I think it was 2009.
It was 8 or 9.
Weren't those teams still top 25 teams, though?
They were good, yeah.
When the Bush sanctions started in and they started losing scholarships.
Yeah, so here's the list. The 10 most overrated programs of the last 10 years. UCLA comes in at number 10. 4 years ranked in the preseason. 2 years that they fell out. So they're 10. Virginia Tech, number 9. 7 years ranked in the preseason top 25. Only six of those they've made it through and still been in there. Florida comes in at number 8. 8 years ranked in the preseason. 6 years ranked in the postseason.
Florida overrated?
Florida overrated.
God.
The last couple of years haven't been pretty. People have been expecting them to take that next step, and they haven't.
McElwain didn't do a bad job last year.
In year one, yeah.
The must-champ years
were ugly.
I just don't think of those words when I think of programs, you know?
Your West Virginia Mountaineers made it.
They're
number 8.
They should be underrated.
6 years they were ranked in the preseason. 5 years they fell out. LSU comes in next. 10 years. All 10 years they've been ranked in the preseason top 25. 8 of those seasons they have made it there at the end. Florida State, 9 years ranked preseason. 7 years ranked postseason. The Texas Longhorns, 9 years ranked. 7 years postseason. Oklahoma. Then Nebraska. USC is number 2 on this list. Every single year of the last decade, they've been ranked in the preseason top 25. 3 of those years, they fell out. And my Georgia Bulldogs are number 1. All 10 years, they've been ranked in the preseason top 25. 6 of those times, they've made it to the
end of the
season.
Unfortunate part for lists like this are, would you look at Mark Richt, Georgia, and say they were terrible? I wouldn't. I still think it's funny that people think Mark Richt isn't a good football coach. I think he's going to turn around Miami, and I think Georgia, it may take a step back.
He was never able to get him to that next level.
Yeah, but that's what's the problem with preseason expectations. Like, you haven't seen any of these teams play. You're going off of recruiting class ranking, And then obviously a big part is the returns, right? Like how many guys come back from their sophomore, junior, senior years, but you don't see these teams play. So you really can't have an understanding of where they stack up versus other programs in the country. So if Mark Richt in Georgia and someone comes in and says, yeah, you know what? Preseason top four, and that's where they start. They lose two or three games. He finishes with 9-10 wins. That's pretty damn good for Georgia. Go look at Georgia's history. It's not great. I did it 2 years ago because I was talking about Mark Richt because I think it's laughable that people think he's a bad football coach. But go look at Georgia's football history. They get roped in because Richt has maybe one of those 11-win seasons. They think, oh, we'll win the national title next year. It's tough to do in the SEC. And that's where I think preseason expectations really kill coaches and some programs is you have this idea that they're a top five program. You haven't seen them play it down. That's why I don't like rankings until almost the college football playoff rankings come
out. Yeah, they shouldn't be preseason rankings. They should just come out 4 or 5 weeks into the season. But there's always going to be preseason rankings and teams that'll fall out because they're just absolutely overhyped. Hey, there's a general manager in the NFL that is sick and tired of people criticizing his quarterback. Is he right? Should he say that? We'll talk about that next. But first, here's Swag with SportsCenter. Just had a good conversation with Jeff Rust of Comcast. I'm just going to say this. I miss his mustache. He had a kick-ass mustache, and he shaved it.
Yeah, he went like bald with just a mustache.
He caved to wife pressure. That was a badass mustache, man.
Yeah, that was very, I want to say, 1988 television sitcom star mustache.
When are we going to grow? Can we at some point in the history of our show grow like show mustaches?
It'd have to be in November, wouldn't it?
Be the mustache bros.
For prostate cancer?
Just give me like a 2 month running start. Week.
I don't know how long you guys need.
It's going to take me a little bit.
You need to give me a month. I can't really grow facial hair.
All right, Sprague, next November, we're growing mustaches.
I'll start tomorrow then.
Start tomorrow.
And we'll have a pretty good layer
we'll get there.
All
right. We can walk around, take cool pictures together in like denim jackets. Well, what do you think?
I'm not going to lie. It's like the one thing in my life, admittedly, I get jealous of people about.
You want like a thick Tom Selleck stash?
Yeah. Just facial hair in general.
Just a lip cover.
Like, I think everybody aims in their profession, like, oh, do you want this and that? Yeah, you do. I never get jealous of people, though. And facial hair is the one thing I get jealous of people with. Like, my brother-in-laws, I hate this. We hang out, the group of us. And my brother-in-laws both have beards, one of which has like a James Harden-like length beard. I can't grow chin hair. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, you have facial hair of like a 12-year-old.
Like Dusty came up to me and was like, use my promo code for this. I'm like, I'm the wrong demo for
I
that,
I don't
dude.
Shave.
He's like, what? I was like, I don't shave. I haven't shaved. I kid you not. Look at me right now. I know the listeners can't see it. I haven't shaved in 3 days.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not even kidding you. I don't need to shave. I can't grow facial hair.
You poor baby.
And so I've always been envious of gentlemen. Sook does this all the time.
Yeah.
He goes like Fu Manchu. He goes the handlebar ride down. I can't grow anything, and it sucks.
All right, we'll do this. We'll do this in November. We'll grow show mustaches together.
Well, and the unfortunate part is because I can just grow a mustache, I look incredibly creepy. So that's why I have no facial hair to be honest.
Well, I'll start clean shaven in October.
And Swag will look like a Civil War general.
Well, if we're going to do this, we should try to raise money for prostate cancer.
Let's do it. Let's do like the whole
thing. No Shave November. That's really what it's supposed to be about.
Let's do this thing. Hey, wanted to talk about a general manager who is, you know what? He's sick and tired of people criticizing his quarterback. The first text we got on that was, let me guess, Andy Dalton. No, it's not Andy Dalton, actually. Nobody's defending Andy Dalton at this point in the offseason. The general manager of the Minnesota Vikings, Rick Spielman. He say, hey, back off Teddy, boy. Back off Teddy. A lot of players around the camp of the Vikings so far have used the word growth when talking about him. But Spielman was asked about criticism about Bridgewater. He said it's, quote, unfair, saying that, quote, he is doing what our coaches are asking him to do. He said one thing Coach Zimmer does preach to all our players is team first. However, we're going to have to win this game this week. If we're going to have to run the ball 30 times, that's what we're going to do. If we're going to throw the ball, that's what we're going to do. If we're going to have to play good defense, ball control, whatever we have to do this week, that's the most important thing. Teddy going into his second year. Last year, goes 11-5, wins the division to go up there, beat Green Bay for the NFC North title, and then play well in our playoff game against Seattle. I think people undervalue what Teddy brings to this football team. And the most important thing, when you look at the end of the day, it was a random exhale. When you look at the end of the day, is wins and losses, and Teddy is definitely a winner.
Can we stop
of all
with,
bears? This is yours.
That was it, huh?
Teddy
that got
Bridgewater?
A, that got a groan halfway through the quote.
No.
I didn't even get the whole thing out.
No.
Jeez, he just went dirtgasm on us.
No. It is the word unfair. Can we
Thank
stop
you.
With multi-million dollar athletes and executives in sports
Ooh.
Whining about fairness?
Ooh.
All right?
Ooh.
If you disagree with the coverage, if somebody comes up and, you know, and in the course of being, are you concerned that Teddy Bridgewater may not be the quarterback you thought he was going to be when you traded up to the end of the first round to get him, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely.
If you disagree, then disagree, but stop with the unfair crap.
I didn't see that one coming.
That.
I didn't know we were going bigger, broader topic.
It's society, man. Can't win with Pokemon Go.
What do you want that's fair?
It's
sports.
That was fantastic.
It's never fair.
I thought that was like an accidental yawn, like we got on the driving range one day. I didn't know.
No, I just thought he was a huge either anti-Teddy guy or a huge Bridgewater
fan. What's your beef with Teddy Bridgewater? So here, Teddy is 23 years old. He was a 32nd overall pick, so he's played two seasons, going into his third year now. Year one, he went 14 touchdowns, 12 picks. Year two, 14 touchdowns, 9 picks. He did raise his yardage by, let's see, about 300 yards. Completion percentage was about the same. QBR was slightly
touchdowns
up.
Touchdowns were the same.
You know,
stats are never going to be, I think, Teddy Bridgewater's best indicator of the quarterback he is. And that's... That's kind of, I think, goes into a different conversation, kind of like what Swigard was saying. Like with quarterbacks, we can't evaluate them all the exact same, right? Like this is such an offensive pass happy league. Well, Bridgewater hasn't shown that he's built like that. Now, this is just year three for him. And I think it's important to remember that he had 45 more pass attempts this past season, same number of touchdowns. He was 17th in average per pass at 7.23 yards, which isn't great. But he did cut down on his interceptions by three.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's important to point out a few times during the past season that maybe Bridgewater deserves a little more credit for who he is as a player. You know, Alex Smith has always gotten that game manager role, right? Where, he's not going to take you above and beyond, but he'll do exactly what you need. Well, that's been pretty damn good for him in terms of where he's gone in the playoffs. And I would argue if that's where Teddy Bridgewater is going, depending on what's around him, that can be okay because it's not just the Green Bay game. Let's not forget the Seattle playoff game that Blair Walsh screwed a 26-yard field goal up with.
Yeah, they should have won that game.
He drove them the length of the field on what was the best defense in the NFL, and he set them up for a game-winning touchdown that should have been a gimme for almost every other kicker. So, yeah, his stats don't measure up to a lot of quarterbacks. He's not flashy with a huge cannon, but the GM's right. He does what the team needs him to do. And he's effective when they need him to step up. At least that's what he showed last year.
I will say this. You know me. I love me some Alex Smith. I think game managing quarterbacks get a terrible rap in the NFL. And I can't understand it. Guys that'll go out there, they're not going to lose you ball games. You put a good team around them and you're always going to be in tension for playoff spots, division titles. We see it with Alex Smith. We saw it with Kirk Cousins. We've seen it with Teddy Bridgewater now, who went 11-5. The one thing and the one criticism that people will always fairly have on that style of quarterback is that there's a ceiling there, right? I mean, there's not a lot of guys that you can point to.
Well, it's just it. How many guys in the NFL have us, even guys who are playoff quarterbacks who are thought to be, you know, how many quarterbacks are there really in the NFL that you can just throw out there with pretty much whoever?
Right. There's not. For me, there's like four,
and,
five.
Oh, you mean like the franchise guy that doesn't need everything? Oh,
there's four or five for me.
I think
maybe
there's three.
That many.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. If you want to cut it down on that. So that would be the only criticism I would say of Teddy at this point.
And he's 23 years old.
He's got a lot of time to grow.
I understand the GM defending his guy and say, you know, and that's what the Eagles are trying to do with Carson Wentz and say, can we groom him? We have seen too
many.
They're
not even going to play him.
Yeah.
I don't even got to dress him this year.
Is that what you got to do now?
Well, yeah. I don't necessarily think that's what you wholeheartedly, because I am against playing guys early, but I think Teddy's a good example of somebody who's gotten experience in his first 2 years. He has a good team around him. They got a good defense. Adrian Peterson's a stud. Didn't play his rookie year, but played last year. It helped out to
played
have
last
him
year,
in the run game.
Kyle Rudolph has been hurt quite a bit for them. If he had a reliable,
their
one
wide
of the
receiver
better tight ends.
Acquisitions haven't really, like Mike Wallace was a disappointment. Greg Jennings didn't do much.
But I will
Patterson
say this.
Hasn't quite.
He hasn't proven
if
to
they
be a great
wanna,
wide
if
receiver.
They want to win at the highest level, he needs to take the next step.
What is that, though? Is that what you're saying of those guys that
carry teams? That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you need to carry a football team, but I'm saying you cannot get away with having a quarterback that throws 14 touchdowns in 16 games. And when it would take such a good defense and such a good run game to do that.
But that's what they have right now. That's who they are.
But
as a
team. I don't think that defense is good enough like Denver's last year to carry you with the Peyton Manning.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, Teddy Bridgewater is also not going to be the worst quarterback to ever start.
No, absolutely not.
But I think they're close in that conversation.
Your margin for error is not as big as if you have a defense.
I'm not sure it's ever going to go away for them defensively, because don't forget that their head coach is the ex-D coordinator for Cincinnati in Mike Zimmer. So the guy's a great defensive mind. He was when he was a coordinator in this league. I'm not sure guys like that ever lose. Like even Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan to me has, I think, shown to be a little overrated as a head coach. But look at his teams defensively. I mean, even when they're not great, their defensive unit usually is a top 10 type team. So he never loses that area. And that's maybe where the Vikings can be better than a Rex Ryan, for example, where Mike Zimmer can always have his kind of hand on the pulse of their defense.
Always have
it be in that top whatever. And then you have to really trust your other coaching staffs and your GM to develop and build the talent around him offensively. But I'm not going to defend 14 touchdowns in 16 games. That's just not their philosophy, is to throw him out there and have him throw it 25 times. They also don't have great weapons outside of AP.
No, they don't. I want to read a couple thoughts here at the Fan Tech sign. Somebody said, why does he need to throw it 30 times? Russell lets his run game defense win for him for years. It's a scheme. He's doing a great job. Just for a comparable, right? Because Russell Wilson gets that, and I would never disagree that he benefited greatly early in his career from having Marshawn Lynch and the best defense in the league. Just look at these stats. First 2 years in the NFL, Russell Wilson, his rookie year, threw 26 touchdowns, 10 picks. In year two, 26 touchdown, 9 picks. Like, there's a big difference there.
Yeah, that's another level. That's a tier that Teddy may never get on.
I get that, you know, some guys, all right, you back them off, you let the team win other games. I understand that. And another listener points out, don't blame Walsh for the loss. He was the only Viking who scored in that game at all. You want to win in the playoffs, your quarterback needs to get the ball in the end zone.
Well, yeah, I get what you're saying, and you're right. You're not wrong, but let's not overlook the fact that you were playing the Seattle Seahawks defense. Like, when you get in those matchups, fair or not, you have to trust guys like your kicker to maybe go out there and hit 5 field goals in a ball game.
Wasn't it like 48 degrees below
zero? That was like
the
coldest game since,
The fact that
Grant went out there without sleeves, remember that? Just walked out like a boss to midfield.
The fact that he was able to get as many field goals and then set his team up for that drive, I think there's some hope there that Teddy can get
better.
It's a big
year for him. It's a big year. Year three is a big year for me with quarterbacks.
I just think the conversation's a little different around him if that kick goes through the uprights. They beat the Seahawks at home in a playoff game. He's a playoff winner in his belt. And then they're going to Carolina, where they probably don't win, but he had beat the Seattle Seahawks. That would have been a huge, you know, little mark on his resume.
Okay, can we cap off this segment with a Viking horn, please?
That's the new Viking horn.
That's not a Viking horn.
I don't know where our Viking horn went.
We better not have lost the Viking horn.
I think Swag took it off our page.
We better not.
I'm not kidding. It was on a different page, and now Swag... Oh, there it is.
Thank you. Much appreciated. So Rick Spielman, the GM of the Vikings, says, take it easy on Teddy. They're being unfair.
Absolutely.
Swag wholeheartedly agrees. Stop being unfair to professional athletes.
You going to go buy a Teddy Bridgewater jersey,
No,
Swag?
My beef is with the GM. Quit whining about coverage being unfair.
He's yelling at
us. You get paid millions. The athletes get paid millions. It's not unfair.
Why are you so angry at us?
Yeah, shh. One more segment. All right, let's close out the show. Hey, ESPN is ready to predict the 2016-2017 NBA season. Where do the Blazers come in? How many wins? What place? Also, they finalized the roster today. We'll talk a little Blazers. Close out the show next on The Fan. That's how you end the show. A little Chris Stapleton. Welcome back in. 2:48. Hope your Tuesdays went well. We've jammed a lot in the last 2 hours and 48 minutes of radio. Got that right. Hey, the big news here locally today, folks. The Blazers now have their roster. It is finalized.
Or as I like to call it, we got another piece for the Boogie Cousins trade.
Hey-o! Hey-o! Yeah, so we've been waiting, and finally it comes today. Mo Harkless agrees to a 4-year contract worth just north, apparently, of $40 million. The contract is fully guaranteed. No options. Could reach $42 million with incentives. Mo Harkless is 23 years old, and now that 10-deep rotation we've been talking about is finalized.
Yeah, give me 7 with Boogie, and I'll be good.
You had traded a couple of guys.
I think this is finally, like, they finally came out that they got Mo Harkless locked up for more than just the qualifying offer of, I think it was 4-2 or 4-3. So that's good news. This is also good news because this is a very easy and movable piece for the Portland Trailblazers. Like, it's a great asset for them. They either play him and stick with the 10-man rotation and say Dame and CJ can carry you to win a championship, or now you have a few guys with their contracts, depending on where teams are sitting, to try to go pull off a move. And I know the famous, the sexy one right now on Twitter is Boogie Cousins.
Boogie. Boogie.
And I'm telling you right now, if that was a possibility, I would be all in on
pull that trigger. Because if you don't have to give up CJ.
No, I don't. CJ's not an option. Like, that would be off the table. I think if Boogie Cousins is going to be traded and he doesn't hit free agency, it's going to be because the Kings have absolutely reached their threshold and they want to start completely over. So you have enough assets.
Yeah, who do you want? Myers, Mo,
well, if you hit the
Mason,
right players,
Vonleh. Who do you want?
You
Connaughton.
Give them some of the right players along with another third team that could maybe provide draft picks depending on what they would get back. I think you absolutely have something in the works there, unless the Kings were willing to take some of your assets and just get rid of Boogie. But I'd imagine they're going to want to haul back. I know that's the sexy name, but I look at this roster and I say, either you got an incredibly deep team that's going to be right back in contending with maybe getting back to the second round, depending how the West shakes up, or now you have really good assets with very flexible contracts to put on someone else's books to go get that third piece that you think really catapults you into that next conversation. Like, could you imagine, like, so ESPN releases their preseason way, way too early rankings, right? They pin the Blazers fourth.
Thanks for, that was my next tease.
Oh, anyway, they pin them fourth. You tell me what the national conversation is tomorrow with the Trailblazers if they were to do a trade and get Boogie Cousins.
Yeah.
Because now you're looking at that with CJ and Dame, and I promise you, it puts them into that Western Conference Finals / title contending conversation.
Hey, guess what, Sprague? ESPN has released their way too early rankings for next year's Western Conference.
Where do they rank?
Have you seen that one yet?
I haven't seen that yet.
It's pretty cool. So they do this like way too early. Look ahead to next season. They're coming in fourth. How about that?
There we go. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, so ESPN experts got together. They picked the Blazers as of right now. This was even before the Mo Harkless news, but they're probably assuming they'll bring Mo back. They got him behind Golden State, San Antonio, and the Los Angeles Clippers. The weird thing about it, though, is that they only pegged him for 2 more wins. So they're thinking 46 and 38 can be good enough in next year's Western Conference for the fourth seed.
Wow,
so
they've got the West really down.
They think the West is just barely going to be better
than
the rest
of the team. So here's the way it is. So it goes Golden State 1, San Antonio 2, LA 3, Portland 4, Utah 5, Oklahoma City 6.
Wow, they don't like Memphis at all.
Memphis 7, Houston 8.
Memphis is a tough one because of injuries, but I'm kind of with you, Swag. I'm surprised on that one.
Yeah, if they can stay healthy, they were the fourth seed.
Who did you put
8th is Houston.
So Dallas is out.
Dallas is out.
Dallas, I don't think Dallas is great.
No, they don't think New Orleans can have a bounce back
New Orleans roster is
no
a
Minnesota.
Mess.
They don't think Minnesota can make
I
that jump.
I think Minnesota could be the surprise team. Houston, I think, is an important
Minnesota
one.
Minnesota, they'll be a late charger. I think it's still going to take them a little bit
still young. Still
well,
really young.
And playing for Tibbs takes some getting used to. He's not your typical NBA coach. So those guys, especially some of those younger guys that maybe haven't been ridden that hard by a head coach in their NBA careers, there's going to be a little culture shock when he comes in and starts running them into
it's
the ground.
It's good for a young team, though, and to get in
so
there early.
They might have a slow start, but they if they all buy in and get on the same page, they could make a late charge.
Well, and anybody out there, and I don't know if it exists, but anybody out there that looks at the offseason and says, great, we added Evan Turner and Festus Ezeli and kept our roster, and you think it's maybe a boring move, that's fine. I'm okay with that opinion. Does your opinion change, though, if Chris Paul doesn't go down with an injury? And the Blazers lost that series.
I have been trying to remind people that the entire offseason. Because I've heard some folks say, look, this is a team that made it to the second round. They pushed Golden State to 5 really tough games. And now, look, they've improved. They're deeper. And that means the ceiling's that much higher. I'm not willing to go there yet. One, I don't think you get past the Clippers. When you don't. You don't get past the Clippers if they stay healthy. You lose probably in 6 games. And then in the second round, Steph Curry didn't play the first 3 games of that series. I think it's important to remember. I'm not trying to downplay what they've done this offseason. I like the way the roster looks, and mainly because of what you're saying, all the controllable assets that you can move.
So much flexibility.
So much flexibility moving forward. And I think if there's anything that we have learned this offseason, you're not landing a big fish in free agency. So how are you going to do it? You're going to have to make a trade. And now you got pick and choose which pieces you want to try and get that done.
I think that's such a sneaky good point that people forget. Like, Neil Olshey has been through this now twice.
Tried, and he keeps whiffing.
Yes, all his unrestricted free agents. And this summer, he couldn't lure any to come here. That's 2 years he's been spurned. And now look at him. Now he's got a bunch of flexibility on that roster.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that'll do it for us. It's a good little show. Listener points out a good point. They added two more games here. ESPN listed them at 46 and 38. That would be 84 games.
84 games, yeah.
Trying to do the math in my head. Yeah, they added two more games. That's what... Casey Holdall, I'm reading your article, forwardcenter.net. That could have been a typo.
Hey, Casey Holdall. You screwed up, buddy.
Come on, Casey. Come on.
Get it together.
Yeah, good stuff, folks. Good stuff. Good show. Hey, if you missed it, we started our NFL preview in the AFC South. Bob Lamy, longtime voice of the Colts, joined us. And we also debuted a new bracket, the best play-by-play call of all time. That'll continue to roll on this week at 1:30. A couple of ones already won and went to the Elite Eight. All right, I'm just going to get out of here now. Thanks for being a part of our Tuesday.
We'll nice talk to
Bob Herrig, ESPN Bob Golf Herrig. Tomorrow with a PGA Championship preview.
12:45, and a Jaguars guy.
Yeah, Frank Frangia at 1
Frank
o'clock.
Frangia. Jaguars, 1 o'clock. There you go. We'll talk to you tomorrow at noon. Number one's next. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.